This is an iHeart podcast.
We have a bunch of ungrateful foreigners in this country, and we're going to talk about why. Sean Spicer is here to break down all things politics. Pam Bondi doing good things? All that coming up on I'm Right. Let's talk about gratitude, shall we? This is going to be an immigration talk because we have a bunch of disloyal foreigners in this country, millions and millions of them, many of them in elected office. But before we get to that, because this is going to be a central theme, gratitude. What creates gratitude? You know, my first car, actually my second car, my first one I had to sell to pay for a scratch on my dad's truck. It's a long story. But my first real car that I had for a long time was a 1983 Honda Accord. It was the biggest piece of crap in the world. You could actually see the road through the floorboard. If you were driving, you could look down, you could just see the road, just parts of it falling off. I paid $600 for that car, and I loved it. I treasured it. The day I went off to the Marine Corps and had to sell that car, I was legit heartbroken, like I was saying goodbye to an old friend. Why? It's a $600 piece of crap car. Because I earned it. I had to work summer after summer, crappy job after crappy job. I built up enough and I earned it. And that was my $600 and that was my car and I took pride in it. Have you ever known or heard about a kid, maybe a little spoiled, as soon as he gets his driver's license, parents go out and buy him a brand new Ford Mustang, something like that, something brand new. How's he treat that car? He treat it well? Or does he wreck it, trash it, scratch it up? 99% of the time they wreck it, they trash it, they scratch it up. Why? Because something wonderful was given to him, not earned, and therefore there's no gratitude, there's no appreciation for it, and in a way, this is how human beings, this is how our minds work, in a way he kind of resents it. That's what's happened with immigration in this country for a very, very, very long time. Citizenship in the United States of America is precious. This is the greatest country in the history of the world with a standard of living other countries, even modern countries, can only dream of. Citizenship in this country should be hard to obtain. We should not, I hear this all the time about, and we need to make it easier for legal immigrants. No, we don't. Citizenship is precious. It should be hard, long. It should be stressful to try to earn citizenship in the greatest country in the world because that produces better citizens. Now, if you just hand out citizenship willy-nilly, no, you can come, and I guess we'll call you a refugee and I'll bring 50,000 of your friends, and nope, we'll bring you here and you can come here. When you just hand it out for years and years and years and years and years, then what happens is the people you hand it out to don't appreciate it at all. If anything, they resent it. And we're not talking about one or two people, this guy in LA, this girl in New York City. We have millions of disloyal foreigners, guests, who have arrived in this country by various means, sometimes legal, sometimes otherwise, and they don't appreciate it. They don't wake up in the morning and think, oh, I love America. They resent everything about this wonderful place because we gave it away to them. This lady, Delia Ramirez, she's getting a lot of publicity over the last 24, 48 hours because of something she said. She went down to Mexico City, stood up at the podium, on camera, behind the microphone, and she said this. Now, I don't expect you to habla, but here's the translation of what she said. Keep in mind, that is an elected member of the United States House of Representatives. Matters of national security, national sovereignty, national economic matters, you name it. That woman, she casts critical votes on your behalf. Her votes affect your life, the life of your children, the United States of America itself. What did her words there translate to? Quote, I am a proud Guatemalan before I'm an American. I am a proud Guatemalan before I'm an American. Why does she think that way? Because she didn't have to earn anything. She's an ungrateful, useless anchor baby whose parents crossed this border illegally, crapped her out in the city of Chicago, and she has luxuriated her entire life here. Instead of freaking Guatemala, she's luxuriated her entire life in the United States of America, has risen to the position of United States Congressman. She votes on behalf of this country and the most prestigious legislative body in the world, and she still doesn't consider herself an American. She's a Guatemalan. So, if she's not really an American, then what exactly is she doing here? Well, it's actually her response to the controversy that's the most revealing part about this. If you're not an American, if you're a Guatemalan first, if you're not an American, then what, pray tell, are you and yours doing here? Here was her response to all the outrage about what she said. I'm going to shorten it up quite a bit, but let's get right to the important parts. Honoring my Guatemalan ancestry only strengthens my commitment to America. Of course, that's ridiculous. But let's get to this part. This is the big part everyone's missing. Quote, anyone who denies our claim on this country, I don't even have to finish the sentence. Let's just repeat that again. This is her words. This is her public response to the outrage. Anyone who denies our claim on this country. Your claim on this country. If you went and found a poor person, maybe a homeless person, and you brought that person out of their bad circumstances and you brought them into your home, would you ever expect them to say the words of, I've laid claim to the couch in the living room. I claim it as mine. Or would you expect a certain amount of gratitude for someone who left a bad situation and you took them in and now they're in a good situation? You would expect gratitude, but we don't get that gratitude from these disloyal foreigners because we allow all of them to flood in here and now they hate us. Now they view themselves not as immigrants, certainly not as guests. They view themselves as conquerors. That woman and the people who elect her, her entire demonic constituency. They're not here to be guests. They're certainly not here to be citizens. They are here to claim this land for themselves. An invading army, an invasion force. And by the way, this same woman, miracle after miracle, this same woman wants the power to defund ICE.
It's time to escalate or fight back or push back against this fascist government.
That's right.
It's time for us to reconsider what ICE is all about. We have to defund them.
A conqueror. And before we move on, because she's certainly not alone here, I just want to pause real quick and remind you that it's not Democrats alone who have pushed this concept out to the world. Come here. Everyone can come here. Everyone's welcome here. We don't want to be mean. We don't want to be racist. The useless, naked Ken Doll Ginger, who's a United States Senator from the red state of Oklahoma, did the best he could to amnesty millions of them.
Do you think that whatever you're working on will have to include a path to citizenship for Dreamers?
I do. I've been pretty outspoken on that. Even last September, Senator Tillis and I both put out a proposal to get citizenship for those individuals that are in the DACA program or were eligible for the DACA program, because we've got a group that was in the DACA program, but we've got a group that never signed up, never went through the paperwork for whatever reason they were eligible for it. We'd like those individuals to be able to have access to citizenship as well.
Disloyal foreigners aided by a tiny cabal of eunuch GOP senators. Oh, don't think Delia Ramirez is the only one. elected Democrat after elected Democrat from every single layer of power in this country have uttered words similar to this. Ilhan Omar says this stuff every day.
waa kalsoonidaas inaan isku qabno anaga Soomaali hadii aan nahay wadankan anaga ku nool.
That sound like a guest? A grateful guest? Keep in mind, Ilhan Omar wasn't born here. She was brought to this country as a refugee. She was brought to this country from maybe the worst place on planet Earth. That place is known as Somalia, a place full of famine, death, female genital mutilation, run by warlords, and a despicable country in every possible way. And that vile little Marxist was plucked out of that hellhole and brought to the greatest country on the planet. And she doesn't wake up and she doesn't go to sleep in full of gratitude for the country where she now resides. She views herself as a representative of the conquerors of this land. She is here to conquer and pillage the United States of America. Not a guest, no gratitude. And this has been going on for decades. Democrats have driven it. Republicans have protected it at every single possible turn. And while they're here, they'll get on camera and say stuff like this.
Here in Congress, we are fighting back every single day. We are fighting to protect immigrant families from mass detention and deportation.
I would say our country should be more fearful of white men across our country, because they are actually causing most of the deaths within this country. We should be profiling, monitoring, and creating policies to fight the radicalization of white men.
Yeah, I know everyone's happy about the secure border right now. I know I certainly am as well, and credit to the Trump administration for securing the border. It looks like we're going to have a negative net migration for the first time in 50 years. All these things are very good things. It's not near enough. It's time to start denaturalizing and deporting these people. That's not an extreme step. That's the moderate solution. The second you get up on camera, especially as a member of the House of Representatives, and announce that you're there in service to a separate foreign country, announce that your loyalty lies with a foreign country, you shouldn't just be stripped of your committee assignments and kicked out of the House of Representatives. You should be removed. Your citizenship should be removed, and you should be on the next deportation flight with all the other scumbags who came here illegally. It's time to start denaturalizing and deporting people. We have to get rid of these vile little conquerors in our midst who walked into our living room with our grace, with our kindness, and they've now, what word did she use? Claim the place. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. This actually leads me perfectly to more redistricting talk. What is happening here? There's nobody better to talk about this stuff than Sean Spicer. I love when Sean comes on. We'll talk to him in a moment. Before we talk to Sean Spicer, we have a long battle ahead of us, you and I. No question about that. We cannot win this fight, all the different fights we have, if we're out of gas at the end of the day. If we're slamming into that energy wall at 2 or 3 in the afternoon, we can't win. Can't. That's why Chalk is here, to change your life for the better. Chalk, it's more than natural or herbal supplements for me. It's gosh, this is going to sound so cheesy. Kind of giving me my youth back. I've been taking a male vitality stack from Chalk for over 3 years, and I just feel younger. I feel way younger than I did 5 years ago. Just full of energy. My mind works really well. I'm in so much of a better mood. Do this. Give it 90 days. Take a female vitality stack or a male vitality stack for 90 days. If it doesn't work, cancel your subscription if you don't feel better. I'm asking you to. They won't harass you. They'll say, okay, that sounds good. Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
These extremists want to be able to choose their voters as opposed to allowing the Texas voters to choose the people who should be privileged to represent them in Washington. It's theft. That's what gerrymandering in its extreme form is.
This is a war. We are at war. And that's why the gloves are off and I say, bring it on.
They expect us to take the punch and say thank you. Well, I am here to tell you not only are we gonna punch back, but we about to beat you down.
We're at war. I don't think it's quite that extreme, but I don't know. Maybe we should ask Sean about it. Joining me now, Sean Spicer of the Great Sean Spicer Show. Sean, this is war. But what's actually happening?
Politics. That's not war. I mean, it's amazing. By the way, you see all these Texas Democrats running to political sanctuary cities, Boston, Chicago, New York. These are the new sanctuary cities. They're just political sanctuary cities. Now, there's an irony in all this, Jesse, which is that all of these same places that they're running to, New York tried to do redistricting last cycle. The court actually shut them down. Illinois has gerrymandered to no one's, you know, I mean, to the nth degree. You look at what they've done to Maryland. There's one Republican left, Andy Harris, and he's connected by a bridge. Literally a bridge is what connects his district. It's just funny that what's good for the goose is never good for the gander. The media and the left won't tell you this, but you know, I don't mean to sound like an 8-year-old. They started it. They did this, and they're just pissed, frankly, that Republicans are doing exactly what they've done all along. They never thought that we would actually take a play from their playbook, but that's exactly what's happened. I mean, go look at Illinois or Massachusetts or Maryland, countless other states. The bottom line is, Democrats have led the way in partisan gerrymandering. And, you know, look, I'm not a huge fan of what's going on in Texas, not because I don't think that they deserve it. I'm actually more concerned about whether or not it's good in the long run for us. I think we can pick up two of the seats, two of the five seats, the Henry Cuellar seat and the Vicente seat, probably on our own. That gets us two without any potential repercussions. So, but that being said, just on a political basis, this idea that we're at war, if that's a war, then let's be honest, they started it.
Okay, Sean, so let's. There's a couple things I want to dig into here. Why is Gavin Newsom getting involved in running his mouth about this? Why is Kathy Hochul, governor of New York, saying we're at war? Why is J.B. Pritzker waddling up to the microphone in Illinois defending Texas Democrats? It's a Texas thing. These are governors of states that aren't Texas. What am I missing?
Well, I think fundamentally what and you're not missing this. The bottom line is the Democratic Party is rudderless and leaderless right now. So these folks are looking for anything that they possibly can grab onto to show that they're willing to fight. Right. Gavin Newsom, just to be clear, California law prohibits what he's doing. So what he's talking about is potentially going to call a special session. Kathy Hochul knows that any reform wouldn't happen for 2 to 4 years. They're just, look, they're grasping at straws, not because they'll actually do anything. Right. And this is where the media is lying to us, that number one, reminding anyone that all of these states led the way in partisan redistricting. So that's kind of a key fact. Number two, none of these states that are looking at quote unquote retaliating can actually do something in the short term. They're posturing. They're trying to, you know, in the case of Gavin Newsom and Pritzker in particular, they think that somehow this is going to win them plaudits if they plot a presidential run. I was the guy who fought back against Texas. I'm the one who did. But the reality is, again, what no one wants to tell you, as Paul Harvey used to say, is the rest of the story. And the rest of the story is that the Democrat pushback won't actually yield any short-term results. Maybe in the long term, who knows? But the bottom line is they're just trying to posture to show that at a current state with the Democratic Party having no leaders, no one who's willing to fight, no one who's got the gumption to take on Trump, these people are looking at anything they can to say, see, I'm the person that will fight for you. It's complete nonsense.
Okay, switching gears from the redistricting thing, because you and I could nerd out on that for a very long time. What's going on with the DOJ and the voter rules, and why are Dems mad about that?
Well, look, I'm sure you know this from watching my show every night, but I had Harmeet Dhillon on my show last night to walk. This is a civil rights thing. These states have ignored their obligation to clean up the voter rolls. And it always has amazed me, like, if you look at the states that fail to act, that fail to clean up their rolls, they're almost entirely run by Democrats. And one has to ask the obvious question, well, why wouldn't you do this unless you actually wink nod wanted to use the weakness and the sort of inaccuracies of voter rolls to your benefit somehow. And Harmeet pointed out to me that, like, look, there are several instances where people who admit that they didn't vote had a vote cast on their behalf on a voter roll. But that's why they're doing it. They have the federal government is leaning on these states that refuse to clean up their voter rolls to do what they're legally obligated to do. And I gave Harmeet this great example. When I was in the White House, I grew up in Rhode Island, and there was a story that said Spicer still registered to vote in Rhode Island. Okay, well, I hadn't since I was in college, but the Rhode Island Secretary of State had never done their job. And so it wasn't my fault. I didn't break any law. I didn't vote two states. I did what I'm supposed to. When you register to vote in a new state, in my case, Virginia, they send a note to the state that says Mr. Sean Spicer is now registered in Virginia, not Rhode Island. But why wouldn't the state of Rhode Island clean up their voter rolls? Why isn't Illinois cleaning up their voter rolls? Why aren't all of these Democratic states cleaning up their voter rolls? Unless one could only surmise that they had some nefarious reason for not doing it. That's the job of a Secretary of State. And when they're not doing it, you have to ask a simple question, why? And it's a pattern in now multiple states with the same thing going on. And I think Harmeet Dhillon in the Department of Justice is now taking that leadership role and demanding that they do what they are legally required to do.
Sean, what's going on in North Carolina? Tom Tillis is thankfully riding off into the sunset, but now we have a very purple state and we're going to have a war here on our hands. Who are the players and who's going to win?
So you've got their former governor, Roy Cooper, running as a Democrat. And I'll be honest, he's going to be extremely formidable. He'll raise a ton of money. And now, I think, officially, former RNC chairman Michael Whatley, who had been the chairman of the state party there, very well known, very well integrated into the state party politics, is now going to be the Republican nominee. Look, Jesse, I'm going to tell you this straight up. That race, to me, is going to be the ultimate proxy fight going into these midterm elections. It's literally as even of a playing field as you can possibly ask for. The Democrats got very lucky by Roy Cooper running. He was very well liked. I think he's a big liberal, and let's face it, he'd be a proxy for Chuck Schumer. But at the end of the day, he's going to raise a ton of money. There's probably going to be upwards of billion, probably $2 billion with a B, spent in North Carolina to make it a very, very competitive state. That being said, as I said, Whatley, not only was the former Republican state chairman in North Carolina, but now has served, three years, as the national party chairman, the Republican Party chairman. That's important because he's had access to a nationwide donor network that he'll be able to now call on. And he has the full backing of President Trump in getting in this race. He was President Trump's recruited candidate. So when Whatley gets in, he's going to have the backing of the Trump apparatus, the political apparatus. And by the way, the money that, you know, the access to donors. Here's a key statistic that needs to be known. Right now, the RNC has just north of $83 million cash on hand. The DNC is about $13 million. But President Trump and his super PAC have just shy of $300 million, right? So you think about what that, and there's no such apparatus at the Democratic level to counteract that. So the Republicans mechanically and financially are going into the midterms in a much, much greater degree than the Democrats are. We're talking about a $300+ million war chest versus $13 million. That is going to give Republicans a massive, massive advantage to do voter registration, data enhancements, get out the vote efforts, advertising. And I think this is where the Roy Coopers are going to have a problem, is keeping up with that machine. Whatley is going to be someone that President Trump wants to make sure wins that race, because he was the one that got him in, and he was obviously his handpicked selector to run the RNC.
All right, Sean, real quick. I understand you have a prediction for who's going to be the Republican 2028 nominee. It's J.D. Vance, right? Or Rubio? Or DeSantis?
It's not even, I will go as far as not just saying that the nominee, I believe the next president of the United States is J.D. Vance. Right now, J.D. Vance has masterfully handled his job as vice president. He is, I mean, you talk about the not just the political piece of this, but I mentioned the finance thing. He is the first sitting vice president to serve as finance chair for the RNC. So he is literally cultivating a massive donor network before our very eyes. Last week, he was in Nantucket raising over $3 million in one night. This is going to be a huge advantage for J.D. Vance. I think he may get some kind of nominal opposition, but I think if he continues the job he's doing right now, he may coast to the nomination.
You know what? That would work for me. I like J.D. Sean, thank you, brother. I appreciate it. That would work for me. I'm not going to complain. As much as I can like any politician, that's how much I like J.D. Vance. Plus, United States Marine. Can't go wrong there. I like our veterans. Don't you? That's why I have Pure Talk, after all. I do not have Pure Talk just because I hate Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile. That's part of it. I do not have Pure Talk just because I save a lot of money. That's also part of it. Let's be honest. I've got a wife and kids. I have Pure Talk because their veteran fought for this country. Their CEO, I should say, is a veteran who fought for this country in Vietnam. Two tours with Mac Vsauk. When Pure Talk gives back, they help veterans get back on their feet. When they collaborate with people, they go find guys who've earned the Medal of Honor and collaborate with them. That's the kind of company we're dealing with. Go switch. It's fast. It's easy. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
So we're going to get a grand jury? That's the word on the street. Pam Bondi's ordered a grand jury. What does that mean? Are we actually going to see a government person go to prison? That never happens. I don't know. Let's ask Rachel about it. Joining me now, Rachel Bovard, Vice President of the Conservative Partnership Institute. Rachel, okay, explain to me this grand jury thing. I'm trying not to get my hopes up. Is someone going to jail?
Well, this is the first step in the process, if they are. You know, we've seen Pam Bondi issue a one-page summary directing the impanelment of a grand jury. Now, as everyone knows from years of watching this, watching too much crime TV potentially, grand juries are secret, but they do compel testimony from witnesses that the government calls. So it could be the case that we see James Clapper, Jim Comey, maybe even Hillary Clinton or someone from her campaign be summoned before this grand jury. And the grand jury is there to determine if the charges presented by the government have enough evidence to provide an indictment. And that is the first step in potentially putting someone in jail. So this is something we'll see the DOJ working with a U.S. attorney, potentially Judge Jeanine, we don't know. But she is so far the only U.S. attorney that Donald Trump has nominated that has been confirmed by the Senate. So she's probably in charge.
Okay, so forgive my stupid questions, but I'm stupid. So I asked them, can't they just clam up? Okay, if I drag in Hillary Clinton, if I drag in Clapper, any one of these scumbags, can't they just say, well, I plead the fifth, I'm not talking. That's what they've been doing when it comes to the Biden stuff.
They can. And, you know, I think a lot of legal experts suspect they will. But this is not the only thing the grand jury is going to hear, right? The government is going to present mountains of evidence to support its case. And Pam Bondi clearly thinks there is enough evidence to support the claims and the, you know, the indictments that they are pursuing. Because we not only have, you know, all of the things that these people have been saying in public for the last, you know, 8 to 10 years, we also now have all of these unsealed reports, namely the HPSI, the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, their completely unsealed report that has been hidden away, that was just declassified by Tulsi Gabbard. She found it in a bunch of burn bags. And in that report, we have evidence contradicting what these people have been saying in public. For instance, just as recently as the end of July, James Clapper and James Comey wrote an op-ed in the New York Times claiming we never used the Steele dossier as part of the intelligence community assessment, the ICA, that was ordered by President Obama. We've testified under oath that it didn't play a critical role in all of the investigations that followed. Well, the report, the House report, completely contradicts this narrative. And if the government can show that there is a conspiracy against rights, that's a federal charge, if they can show that there is an ongoing criminal conspiracy to manipulate evidence to cover up the truth, that's a federal charge that could stick. It doesn't have a statute of limitations as long as the federal conspiracy is ongoing. So this is something that we could see stick regardless of their testimony, as long as the government can make its case.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to do some guessing here, but I don't understand legal matters. If we do get indictments, and Lord willing, we will get indictments, where are we getting them? Everyone knows why I'm asking that question. If it's in D.C., you might as well not have it at all. Where would these things take place and when?
Those are unknowable things, but I'll give you my best guess. You've seen John Solomon report, you know, that this could be done in Florida. It could be close to actually where a lot of the Mar-a-Lago raid cases took place in that district court there. We could see them there. And grand juries tend to work somewhat quickly. You know, depending on the complexity of the arguments the government is making, this could take, you know, several weeks to a month, but it's not a super drawn out process. So we could get an answer to this, you know, fairly quickly. And I will just say, this is just, you know, my political hat at this point. In my mind, this is a no-fail exercise for Pam Bondi, because as you said at the outset, we never see people in government go to jail. We never see people held accountable for anything. You know, people that were already tried to being held accountable in this process, Kevin Kleinsmith, who manipulated the FISA warrant against Carter Page, got a slap on the wrist. The felony that he pleaded guilty to came with a 5-year prison sentence and a $250,000 fine maximum. He didn't serve a single day in jail. And this cannot stand with regard to Russiagate. So it is my firm hope and belief that Pam Bondi is bringing the goods, because I just think you're going to make people feel completely demoralized and disenfranchised if once again we are presented with the evidence of the layers and layers of corruption that have happened at the height of our government by the people in power, and absolutely no one is held accountable. There is something to be said for no one is above the law, and people need to be in orange jumpsuits and handcuffs as the coda to this story.
Amen. Rachel, thank you, ma'am. I appreciate you very much. Somebody does. I've said it before. Someone has to burn for this. We can't have another one. We can't have another case that's cut and dry, government people committed crimes and no one goes to prison, or we're going to go to a bad, bad place in this country. Almost as bad as the olive oil that's on your shelf. Look, don't get mad at me. You have bad olive oil. It's old. It's been on your shelf for I don't know how long. How long has it been there? Do you know how long it was on the grocery store shelf before you bought it? Our olive oil is old and flavorless and bland and crappy. And that's why we have farmfresh246.com. What is it? They'll grab you olive oil fresh from a farm and ship it to you. Ah, you're skeptical. I get that. Why don't you get a free bottle? They'll send you a $39 bottle of olive oil at no charge. You pay like a buck to cover the shipping. Try it. Try one bottle and you'll be all, oh no, my olive oil's been old. Farmfresh246.com. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Russia hacked the election.
Russia hacked the election.
Russia hacked the election.
Russia hacked the election.
Let's be clear, Russia hacked the election.
Definitively, Russia hacked the election, and Russia is doing it again now.
The head of the National Security Agency, the head of the FBI, all of these intelligence experts saying Russia hacked the election.
The FBI, the CIA, the NSA, the former Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, I mean, they've all said this. So to believe that that's wrong, you have to believe they're all involved in an elaborate conspiracy to get Donald Trump, which seems a little far-fetched to me.
Joining me now, the great David Bozell of the MRC, president of the MRC, the Media Research Center. Okay, David, obviously the media was complicit in pushing that out to the public. But a question I have for you, because you would know this far better than I would. Why? Is it just that they're all a bunch of crazy libs? Is it that they work hand in hand with the ugly agencies of this country? Why did they all fall in line immediately?
Ends justify the means for the left. It's an abhorrent principle, but they live by it. And when you have control over these major apparatuses of government, sometimes you do things that you don't that no normal person would think. I'm going to engineer the entire federal government apparatus against a businessman who just threw his hat into the ring and just so happened to win the presidency. And this was also legacy preservation on Obama's part. He had, remember at the time, Republicans had been pledging to repeal Obamacare, replace Obamacare, and undo his entire presidency, 8 years of work. And we live in the executive order era, Jesse. Congress does very little, passing one, two bills a year. So when you live in the executive order era, the executive, the presidency becomes infinitely more important. So when you have those government tools at your disposal and you want to preserve your legacy, and you know that the guy coming up behind you is going to undo it, you're going to get tempted to do some unruly things to trip him up at a minimum. The media spent over 2,000 minutes claiming exactly in that montage what you just saw, guys, that the Russians were guilty of hacking into the election. I would use their claim that they use against President Trump all the time. Those were baseless accusations. Time and time again. So 2,000 minutes devoted to this hoax. And when the president suggests that the media is the enemy of the people, this is the story that he's talking about. This right here is the number one story that he's talking about, because he knew in his gut that Russia never helped him, never moved one single solitary vote in his direction. He knew it, and he knew that they knew it, and he knew that they were lying. And so when he calls the press the enemy of people, in front of his crowds with the press behind the rope lines and all those things, this is the story that he's talking about, Jesse.
David, so the ends justify the means. Obviously, you're correct about that. You can't come to any other conclusion. But if you're Jake Tapper, any one of those people, it doesn't matter, any one of those people on every channel, and you sit down and you push a lie like the incoming president or current president, depending on the date, he's only there because of Russia, and you know it's a lie. How do you sleep at night and think that you're the good guy in that story? I just don't understand. I can't wrap my mind around that. Even people I hate, and I hate all kinds of people, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, I don't think they sleep. I don't think they think that they're the good guy in this story. I don't think that even crosses their mind. For them, when you have Trump derangement syndrome, which is what a number of them had developed at this particular time. When you believe your own talking points, that democracy is at risk, because a New York real estate developer had assumed the presidency. When you start believing that in your head and going to the caviar and wine cocktail parties night after night after night, and that's all that your buddies can talk about, this is the kinds of things that you'll end up doing. This is why they won't cover it now. They would have to admit their complicity in the whole scam. And so, you know, again, like I said, you had over 2,000 minutes devoted to this as the so-called scandal was unfolding. Now that I think we've counted up, they're close to 5 minutes, you know, so far, something like that, you know, through this week. So cover it now would to admit their own culpability in this whole deal. And they also wanted, they were addicted to power too. I mean, these are basic human emotions, right? And so they were addicted to being close to President Obama. President Obama was the cool kid on the political block, right? He was a cool kid in town. He had been senator for just a year. Then he rises rapidly to become the president. And every facet of the Washington press corps needed to get in with him, needed to get in with his people. His people had descended on Washington from Chicago. They needed to cover him glowingly. And as those 8 years developed, they developed all those friendships and relationships. And that's how, when you see Trump as the successor and he's pledged to overturn and undo your entire legacy, they went guns out, guns blazes to destroy President Trump.
All right. You say they're addicted to power, and obviously that's correct, but aren't they losing it because, in large part, because of things like this? That people are, you guys talk about this all the time with the wonderful MRC. Yeah. People are changing the channel. The ratings are going down. We're seeing such a hemorrhaging of money that people are getting fired. The power, because they abused it, is being taken from them. How can they not see that?
Yeah, it's a tough deal to equate. So yeah, the ratings are sinking like a stone. I mean, CNN lost 50% of its audience from the 2020 election night to the 2024 election night. I mean, 50%. This is the adult audience. Just they're cratering. The networks are cratering. CBS is essentially through Paramount at the takeover from Skydance. They face quite a bit of upheaval in their news operation, and what's going to happen there is going to be anybody's guess. So yes, the ratings are creating. However, I was just looking at readership charts from the top news websites in America. New York Times is still number one ranked news website in America. Now, a lot of people are going to play Wordle and crossword puzzles, and that explains it, but they're still number one. Google News, Apple News, Microsoft, MSN.com, these guys are all in the top 10 of readership nationwide. All of these networks, CBS, CNN, MSNBC, Washington Post, New York Times, all these people, all these operations that perpetrated this hoax are embedded in Microsoft, Google, and Apple's news presentation. So millions upon millions of people are still reading this and digesting their presentation of the news, albeit headlines aggregated. But it's and not watching these guys. You know, people are not going to anchors and homepages for the news anymore. They're going to aggregators now. So these networks have embedded themselves into the big tech apparatus. You go on Google News, go on Apple, I dare anybody, go on Yahoo, the big aggregators. It'll be all the liberal networks, one after the other, after the other, after the other. Then they'll squeeze in a Fox, right? Maybe they'll squeeze in a Breitbart, and then there'll be one after the other of more liberal networks, more liberal reporting. So it's very negative against Republicans. It's very negative against Trump. And this is why, you know, now, he uses it to his political advantage, right? No Republican has ever used hatred by the media to their political advantage as well as President Trump. And I would actually submit that that's why he's a two-time president, because he's done that so well.
So it sounds like what we're looking at is a facade. They have more clicks, they have more ratings, they have more readership because, just like these dirty communists always do, they're just working together. They're working together. Google is going to hold up the New York Times. Microsoft is going to hold up Yahoo. They're all going to work together.
Yeah, they had their believability rate, I think, is Gallup had the latest one was in April. It's in the low 30s. I mean, I think Pelosi has a better approval rating than some of these liberal networks, believe it or not. So they're in the believability rate is in the toilet. I think almost half the country has statistically no trust in the media. I think that number is around 44%. That's half the country that has no trust in any media whatsoever. It's because these guys who are dominating the airwaves by quantity and dominating our social feeds and our aggregator feeds also by quantity have been wrong and purposely wrong for the better part of the last 8 to 10, I mean, covering first for the Obama administration and then just dogging the Trump administration and then trying to, you know, sell us this hooker with a heart of gold routine that Joe Biden was walking around, you know, no problem, healthy, you know, totally acute, totally on it, you know, no problem holding the nuclear football, et cetera, et cetera. So that's why these guys have no trust anymore within the American public writ large. It's a terrific opportunity for shows such as yourself or networks like The First to just squeeze through and come forward with the truth. People are dying for a fair presentation of the news. So it's a terrific opportunity for the center-right ecosystem to shine here.
David, thank you for what you do, man. Appreciate you. Lighten the mood. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. And you know, I have two sons, wife and two sons, and there's something that my wife can't wrap her mind around, why we all think farts are funny. When we see someone, or I should say hear someone or smell someone do it in public, it makes us laugh, we snicker. When they do it in front of her and she starts screaming and yelling, we all start laughing. And I don't have an explanation for that, ladies. I don't know why I find it funny.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Funny. Dudes find it funny, especially when someone farts in church.
This is an iHeart podcast.